Welcome to What's for Dinner, a radio show about food, cooking, and eating, and sharing favorite recipes from Petersburg, Alaska, and around the world. Brought to you by KFSK Community Supported Radio in Petersburg, Alaska. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson. Coming up on What's for Dinner, Sunday dinner. Using overripe fruit to make yummy things like fruit leathers and the drink of the week. That's all coming up.
Oh, the shark has pretty teeth, dear, and he shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife as Maggie, dear, and he keeps it out of sight.
Support for What's for Dinner comes from Hammer and Mekon Grocery Store, offering an expanded organic produce selection, deli, bakery, and meat department, with delivery and van service available. Hammer and Mekon Grocery Store, a Petersburg family-owned business since 1921.
So there's not a trace of red on the sidewalk Sunday morning. Lies a body oozing life, someone sneaking round the corner.
Welcome to What's for Dinner. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson. I'm not a chef. I just love to cook. And sometimes I cook real flops. Let's see. This week, a couple things I cooked. Well, I cooked for a bunch of folks down at the Sons of Norway on Saturday, so I hope everyone who tried that dish liked it. I made a kale and garbanzo bean dish and with some yogurt. If you missed that, and I'm going to give you that recipe today. Super easy recipe to make. It takes, seriously, from beginning to end, 10 minutes. And very, very healthy and very inexpensive. Really, it's one of the most inexpensive meals that you can cook, and especially if you have your own kale and you don't have to go out and buy it. This is a kale chickpea Swiss chard Buddha bowl. I adapted this from the Minimalist Baker. She makes a Buddha bowl, but it's different. It's definitely different. But anyway, I love her website, The Minimalist Baker. If you're vegan, gluten-free, all of that, she's she doesn't use very many ingredients either, so you might want to check it out. Lots of recipes with peanut butter. Anyway, you start off with 2 tablespoons of olive oil, a half of a red onion sliced. And, or you can use yellow onion, white onion, really whatever you have. A 15-ounce can of chickpeas, drained, rinsed, patted dry if you want. When I was downtown at the Sons of Norway this weekend for the market, I just threw all the chickpeas in a big bowl and scooped them out. I don't really mind using the chickpea water, especially if you're cooking for a large amount of people, and I didn't really have time to drain all the chickpeas and dry them out on paper towels. But so if you don't get that done, don't worry about it. Also, a couple big handfuls of kale and chard. Remove the larger stems, but I just leave the rest of the stem on. I don't cut through, the veins, and I just chop it all up. And let's say the chard leaf is maybe whatever the leaf biggest leaf is, I put all the rest of the leaves right in there, and I roll it all up and then just slice it nice and thin, and then slice it the other way so it's nice and chopped. Half of a teaspoon of garam masala, spice blend you can find in the grocery store. I know you can get it at Hammer and Wecon. I don't know about Trading Union. Quarter teaspoon of salt and pepper. A quarter teaspoon of red pepper flakes. And I generally use Asian red pepper flakes. 3/4 of a teaspoon of garlic powder. 1/2 teaspoon of oregano. 1 teaspoon of lemon juice. Some chopped mint and cilantro for garnish. Also, some plain yogurt. I've been using a new mixture. I call it my house blend because it's what I use at my house a lot. And it's a mixture with some salt, some garlic powder, black pepper, and the Asian red pepper. And, you know, I use so much of each and I put it in a jar. And actually, I use that on so much right now, so much of my food. So I used a little bit of that on Saturday as well. You can mix the garlic and the red pepper and your salt and pepper together if you want to. If you don't want to use oregano, you don't have to. It's optional. Mexican oregano would be really good with this, just the dried stuff, or fresh oregano too. Heat a large skillet over medium heat. And I added my oil to that, and then the onions. And I let the onions get soft. And when you put the onions in the pan, then that's the time to season your vegetables. You know, generally season in layers. That's what makes your food so good. So I seasoned with some salt and pepper, and then I let the onions cook a little bit, and then I added in the chickpeas. You can also, if you've drained your chickpeas and rinsed them and patted them dry, you can add all of the spices right to your chickpeas in a bowl and kind of coat the chickpeas with the spices first. Either way you want to do it, you want to add them in right to the pan, you can do that too. Whatever you do, if as long as you use those spices, it's going to be good. But you do want to flavor in layers. So you've got some salt and pepper down with the onion. Now we're going to throw in the chickpeas. And then you're going to add your, you know, red pepper flakes, your garlic powder, your garam masala. And immediately it's just going to smell great, right? It's going to be wonderful. And then you just let those cook for a couple minutes to soften the chickpeas up a little bit. Then you add your chopped kale and chard. Let that cook just a little bit so it softens. I squeeze on the lemon juice, mix it all together, and voila, that's it. The whole thing takes about 10 minutes. And you put that in a bowl, a little dollop of yogurt, plain yogurt, over the top of that. Sprinkle on some chopped mint and cilantro. Also, I took some chopped mint and cilantro and I put it in there toward the end too and mixed it all up together. But you can garnish with a little bit of that and then a little bit of, you know, if you want extra salt or pepper on top or any sort of other, you know, curry is good. Just a little bit on the end. So it's right on top. Just gives it that little extra oomph. Maybe even another squeeze of lemon juice. But that is the chickpea kale Swiss chard, and I still have that recipe here if you want a copy of it. And KFSK will be down at the market a couple more times this summer, so if you didn't catch us this last Thursday, you can catch us again on a Saturday coming up in August. All right, I also made pan-seared rockfish with kale. I had kale on my mind. And Evelyn, I don't think she even tried this because she had something earlier that night. But I'm not really sure that Rodney really liked this dish. So I don't know. It could have been one of those flops. I thought it was fine, but I'm going to give you the recipe because it's a good one, I think. It might just... Maybe nobody wanted kale after the kale morning, but I used just a nice rockfish steak, or no, it was a fillet that I bought down at Coastal Cold Storage. And I've just put some olive oil in a cast iron skillet, and I coated the rockfish with some spices. This is a spice mix that has guajillo in it, and ancho chili flakes, some ground sesame seed, little cocoa powder, some paprika, smoked paprika, sweet paprika, some cinnamon, some onion, garlic, allspice berry, cumin, cloves. It's got a lot in it. This is just a great spice. But I just coated that, and you can coat it with any spice that you want, really like that, you know, that has that sort of that rich, chocolatey, cinnamony, berry, spicy tone to it. And I just seared it for about 2 to 3 minutes on each side. And I cut it into smaller portion size pieces too. And I seared all those, and then I set it aside after they were done. And then I added a little more oil to my pan, and the pan was getting, you know, dark. Those spices were really turning dark. I added a little more oil to the pan, some shallots and some onions. I also added a few more spices, salt, pepper, my house blend, and really nothing more than that. So that house blend I was talking about, some salt and pepper, perfect. I deglazed it with a little white wine and added some chopped kale. So immediately those vegetable or the shallots started bubbling. The pan was deglazed with all that nice spice, and then I added the chopped kale and just kind of stir-fried it in there for a few minutes. And I put the kale on the plate with the fish over the top, little squeeze of lemon, and there we have it. That was delicious, I thought. I ate it, and there's still some leftovers, I think, in the fridge, but I think my family might have been sick of kale that day. Give it a try and tell me what you think. You can email Mindy at kfsk.org, or perhaps you will have something else you might want to use. Instead of the rockfish, you could use a halibut. This same thing would be great with salmon. You could use the same sort of spices and sear the salmon and use the kale. And, oh, and by the way, the chickpea kale Swiss chard bowl, you could use, you could cook all of that just the way I mentioned, and then you could add some chicken pieces to it that you've browned and seasoned, and you can add that to the pot and put a lid on it, put it in the oven, and bake it for about 40 minutes. Add some chicken pieces like chicken thighs, chicken legs or something. And that would be delicious. It would also be good with pan-seared salmon. So there's, you know, you could use it as a side dish or as a main dish. Also, yesterday I made some fettuccine. And I'm so happy I have this vintage, I have this new fettuccine or a pasta roller. And it's cast iron, and it's from like 1950. I saw it on eBay. It wasn't that expensive. Everyone wants all the new pasta rollers these days, and I've been thinking about getting a pasta roller. I had the Atlas pasta roller years ago, and then it's like one of those, I ended up putting it in a garage sale, and now it's like, oh, I wish I had a roller. And kind of at our house, we like old things. For instance, when you come to my house for a cup of coffee, I'm going to hand crank my coffee grinder to grind the coffee because I like that hand crank coffee maker or coffee grinder. Same thing with the pasta machine. I just like the idea of hand cranking because you have control over the speed, and I just like that. Even though you don't have the extra hand, that's one thing. But it's really fun to crank this cast iron pasta machine from 1950. And actually, it was made in Ohio, but half of the instructions are in Italian. and it had a couple different wheels with it, the fettuccine and spaghetti and some others. And it's red. Original paint on this thing is red, like a baked in cast iron red. So I absolutely adore it, and I tried it yesterday for the first time. It works great. The only thing with it is, like the new pasta machines or the rollers, they have probably some sort of guide on each side to keep the pasta from getting any further and going into the crank area, you know what I mean, into the gears and stuff, where this doesn't. But you just have to be very careful, and you have to go slow, and you just have to watch what you're doing so your pasta doesn't get too wide. And other than that, it's wooden, and it's heavy metal, and I love it. So I made some fresh pasta dough yesterday. Simple, easy recipe. This is an egg pasta, and I put it through that machine and made some great fettuccine. The first few weren't that great. It took me a while to figure out... I really needed to have a lot of flour on this pasta to put it through the machine so it didn't stick to the rollers, because once it does that, then it pulls and your pasta just doesn't turn out right. So I just thought, I'm going for it here, and I slathered that dough with flour every time I put it through the machine, and then it came out perfect. And then even when you're cutting the fettuccine noodles, when you're using one of these pasta rollers, you really need to have a lot of flour on it. You don't want the blades of your fettuccine roller to stick to the pasta, because then it's just not going to perforate it like it should. So lots of flour on this. The drier the pasta, the better. So here's my recipe. 2 3/4 cup of flour. I didn't use semolina flour either. I just used plain old white flour, and 4 large eggs. So you know the drill there. You throw the flour on your table or wherever you're going to put it, and make a well and break your 4 eggs into it, and then use a fork and slowly start to whisk the eggs, and you whisk a little bit of flour in more and more and more and more. And finally, it all comes together, and you put a little more flour down on your board or your table, and you start to knead the dough. And this process takes a little while. It's a good 6 to 10 minutes of kneading. And even, you know, you just want to keep using that flour, because you don't want the dough to stick to your hands at all. Just keep kneading, 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 kneading in the flour, and then you can let it sit for about 20 minutes with a towel on it. It'll be very springy, and smooth and elastic. Let the towel sit over it for about 20 minutes. So that's it. It's 2 3/4 cup of flour, 4 large eggs. Put the well in the center. Mix it all up together. I don't think you can mess it up, really. You can't. You could also do this in your food processor. You put the flour in there first, then you add your eggs, and then and you're basically just going to pulse. So you're going to just pulse it until, like, dough clumps form, but you're not processing it into a big ball. You're just letting the dough clumps form, and it's not all together yet, and then you're going to turn it out onto your floured surface. You might as well just do it by hand, because that's the fun part, and the kids can help with that. Then cut up your dough. I cut mine into 8 equal pieces, and this makes it about 1.5 to 1 1/4 pound of pasta. And I just flattened each piece into a rectangle with my hands. And then I made sure that both sides were covered with flour. I put the first one through without doing that because I thought it was very dry. And sure enough, it was like, what is wrong here? It's, you know, took me a while. So I made sure, as I began to learn what I was doing, to really get that flower on. And then, sure enough, it just rolled like a charm. Crank down a couple times, roll it through. So a couple times I'd let it roll through at the same height, and then I'd crank it down a little bit more, and then I would just, I had a bunch of flour on a board in front of me, and I just would pat the sheet of pasta down onto the flour and turn it, then wipe it off. It was perfect. And getting it through, guiding it through, and the pasta was so great that I didn't have to worry about having a hand over on the other side to grab that sheet of pasta, because it kind of layered underneath, and I could pick it up after I was done rolling it, and it wouldn't fall apart or anything. So it was definitely a good recipe. And then, when it was time to click on the fettuccine roller, I quickly learned, after the first batch, that I needed to add, again, more flour to that long sheet of pasta that I made. And once I did that, the fettuccine noodles came out great. They were light, they were airy, they were so thin, like paper thin almost, and delicious. They cooked in, I put them in the water, and they were cooked in like 30 seconds. So, huge success with the fettuccine yesterday. I'm going to try to leave the pasta machine somewhere where I can get to it quickly when I want to use it. I'm going to try to just make homemade pasta. That's not always going to happen, but hopefully it'll happen more now that I have this great machine. Anyway, for the pasta, I had some small tomatoes. I had lots of onion. I had parsley, of course, olive oil. I really wanted to use anchovies, but I didn't have any, so I had some anchovy paste. Lots of parsley. I had plenty of lemons. So I just started off, before I put the pasta in the water, I started off on the other burner with some olive oil and a handful of the really nice cherry tomatoes that look homegrown. And I chopped those up in half and I threw those in there with some onion. And I let those cook down, and they started releasing all their great tomato juice, and let those cook down a little bit. Then I added some white wine, just a little bit, and some garlic. Of course, I had salt and pepper already, and then I also added some anchovy paste, about a half of a teaspoon of anchovy paste, and mixed all that together. I didn't want an overpowering sauce, because I really wanted to taste the noodles. And so there we go. That was all done. And then I threw the noodles in. They took 30 seconds. Took them right out of the pasta water and over into the pan next to it with the tomatoes. The smell was amazing. Mixed all that up together. Added some grated Parmesan cheese and a handful of chopped parsley. And delicious. It was a very good meal. I had leftovers for lunch today. Evelyn would have preferred a thicker sauce on those noodles, but you know how kids, they love cream sauce. But I really wanted to just taste the egg noodles, and it was super great and very, very easy. Even if you don't make your own homemade pasta, you can buy fresh pasta, or somewhat fresh, you know what I mean, in the grocery store in a package. It's not dried. Still, it takes, you know, a minute and a half. You could do the same thing, though. The sauce, easy. Just throw around some tomatoes, some olive oil, some spices. Make sure you have some garlic and parsley. And you've got a quick sauce for pasta. But if you make your own, it really, the cost there is not much. It's eggs and flour. So just remember that. That's a pretty inexpensive way to eat. And that's it. That's basically what I'm sharing for Sunday dinner this week on What's for Dinner. If you have a great meal or a great dish that you want to share with us, you can always call us here at 772-3808 or email Mindy at kfsk.org, and we'll share. Coming up next, we're going to talk about what to do with overripe fruit on What's for Dinner.
Found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill, when I found you, the moon stood still on Blueberry Hill, and it wasn't until.
Support for What's for Dinner comes from Inga's Galley, serving locally grown food and fresh caught seafood, including sandwiches, curries, kebabs, and salads, with king salmon now on the menu, as well as spicy pork sandwiches on ciabatta rolls, featuring summer citrus salad with lots of greens from Farragut Farm, including kale, beets, grapefruit, red onions, and a choice of dressing. Inga's Galley, with heated outdoor seating in downtown Petersburg. 772-2090.
Though we were far, you're part of me still. Oh, you were my thrill on Blueberry Hill. Come climb the hill with me, baby. We'll see what we will see.
Welcome back to What's for Dinner. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson. Speaking of Blueberry Hills, we have lots of them here, don't we? Lots of blueberries around here. You can have so much fun looking up recipes for blueberries, and I have lots of them here at KFSK if you need a good blueberry recipe. And, of course, we've done a couple blueberry shows, and maybe it's time to do another one soon. But what if you've picked a lot of blueberries and they're going bad and you need to find something to do with them? I know it happens. I try not to let it happen at my house that fruit goes to waste, but it does happen every now and then. And sometimes, unfortunately, it happens, like it seems, before you ever even get the fruit in the house, after you buy it at the store. Whatever, you know, maybe they get scrunched in the bag or one gets dropped and before you know it, it's bruised and it's turning bad. But so, you know, it's hard. And, you know, those... You think you're going to use all those strawberries that you bought, and then all of a sudden you find that some are going bad really quick. So what are you going to do with them? I had, which is what made me do this show today, using fruit that is overripe, not bad. Of course, you don't want to use fruit with green slime all over it or brown fruit, right? But fruit that is, maybe there were a few of the brown ones in the thing and you've picked out the good ones left. Well, you can do something with them. And yesterday I made some fruit leather and it was a huge success. I think actually, though, I used a little bit too much fruit and I could have made the fruit leather a little bit thinner, but I had never made fruit leather before. I've talked about making fruit leather, but it was so easy. So you can make all sorts of things with leftover fruit that it really is going bad. So you can use your bananas, apples, pears, peaches, plums, all of it. And you can put them in a saute pan with some butter, sprinkle on some brown sugar, you know, and that's what's going to make them turn into a sauce. And you can serve it over ice cream, pancakes, pound cake. You know, there's so much that you can do. You know, it's just a common problem this time of the year. You have all this fruit, and maybe you can even get some overripe fruit. I don't know if the grocery stores sell overripe fruit. I haven't never checked, but you can make a bunch of this stuff. But You know, one thing about overripe fruit is it's a really, really intense flavor. But you can make quick bread, like, of course, bananas. I mean, Rodney just brought home from the store the other day. I don't know how much they were, 39 cents a pound, or maybe, I don't know, maybe more than that. But bananas with brown spots all over them, and that's when they're best, really, to make banana bread. But, you know, another thing that you can do with that is just immediately put all that stuff onto a cookie sheet and throw it in the freezer and freeze it individually. You know, cut the slices of banana, put them on a cookie sheet and freeze them. And they freeze great. And then you can put those into a Ziploc bag and use them for when you want. So when we see those bananas on sale, he brings them home, chops them up, and then they go into a Ziploc bag, and that's what goes into his smoothies every morning. So think about that when you see that fruit on sale or you have it at home and you don't have time to make banana bread out of it, just, you know, throw them in the freezer. And you can do that with all of your berries. If some of them are starting to, they're not getting slimy or green or anything, but they definitely lost their plumpness, you can put those in the freezer and freeze them and use them later on, especially for smoothies. You can make jam out of those. You can make refrigerator jam. It's just quick, and it's an easy way to use overripe strawberries or any other fruit. Very quick refrigerator jam. Or you can make a very quick filling. You just add a little bit of sugar. Throw it in your on your stove, and you can make very easy little pies using wonton wrappers, egg roll wrappers. You can roll up this filling inside an egg roll wrapper and fry it. You want to roll it like a burrito, you know, but fry it, or a wonton, or egg roll, I guess. A little powdered sugar over the top of it when it comes out. Very simple to do. Doesn't take much time. You can also make crumbles, cobblers, and pies. I mean, if they're so squishy you can't use them at all, well, then that's one thing. Then maybe they do need to go in the compost. But yeah, make a crumble or a cobbler or a pie. And so, yeah, when they're not so pretty or plump, then that's easy. Just wrap them in some pastry with a little bit of sugar and you're good to go. And with crumbles, you don't even need to make the pastry, just in a pan. And then you're going to make a crumble with some maybe flour, butter, oats, maybe a little brown sugar or a sugar of your choice, maybe a little bit of honey. And you put all that in your food processor and process it together, and it'll get crumbly. And you crumble that over the top, and that's a very quick. Even if you just have a couple pieces of fruit, you can make a couple small little crumbles using muffin tins or ramekins to use up that fruit. Of course, I mentioned smoothies. You can make chunky sauces for sundaes and pancakes. And I buy fruit just to make sauces with ice cream. Anyway, I like to, you know, caramelize fruit in a little bit of butter with a little bit of sugar and put that over ice cream. And you can do that with fruit that is extra ripe too. And you can smash them with a potato smasher even. And you can fold fruit right into the batter of your pancakes. And you can layer them on pancakes, or you can layer, you can put some of that fruit with a little bit of sugar on it in between two pieces of French toast, and that would be good. And just make the French toast with it in between the bread, and then coat it all with your egg mixture or your custard mixture, and then brown it on your griddle. Another thing that you can do with fruit is you can make sauces for meats. So you can chop it into small bites or whisk it in a blender, and you can add it to like chicken stock, balsamic vinegar. You can make a glaze with that for meat, and you can substitute it for jam when you're cooking things like, for instance, chicken with shallot and apricot. That's what I was thinking about the other day because I have I had some old apricots that needed to use up. And I also had shallots. I've been buying those shallots at the store that are already... the skins are already off. They're so convenient. They're delicious. So I've been using those. So you can make a sauce with meat. Another thing you can do is make roll-ups. Fruit leather roll-ups. So I took a jelly roll pan that I had, and I lined it with parchment paper and a couple different kinds of parchment paper you can get in the store. You can get the wider one and you can get the narrower one. The narrower one will fit perfectly in like a jelly roll pan, a regular size jelly roll pan. And that's the one I used so that it just, you have enough parchment on each side to form a little lip. You need about 1 1/4 pound of chopped fruit, 3/4 cup of sugar, and 1 to 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice. And preheat. Now, I just did this in the oven. If you have a dehydrator, then you can use your dehydrator. But if you remember from a week or two ago at Once for Dinner, I was telling you how disappointed I am about my little dehydrator. I could never do a nice big sheet pan of fruit leather in it. I got to go a little bit bigger with the dehydrator. So I just did mine in the oven. And I started off, my oven has a baking drawer on the bottom, and that goes up to 450. And I thought, oh, well, just in case I want to hang the pasta to dry in the top oven, or what if I want to do something, bake some bread in the top oven, I'll just do this in the bottom oven. So I put it on 170, and I stuck it in there for a while. And I think it was almost like a couple hours later, I was like, this is not working. I think because it doesn't have a lot of air circulation around it. It needed to be in the center of my big oven. And I actually turned the convection fan on. So I put it in the upper one, turned the convection fan on to, and I was on 170. And before you know it, it started dehydrating a lot quicker. So if you have one of those ovens that has a baking drawer, which I love the baking drawer, it's great. But if you need something with a lot of air circulation around it, don't use it. Use the big oven for fruit roll-up. So preheat your oven, 170 to 200. Combine the fruit and the sugar in a blender. Now, you're going to want to take the skin off of your fruit. And if your fruit is really turning ripe, it's not going to be that hard to get the skin off. But then you might be making a juicy mess. But just try to get as much skin off as you can. And I had some plums, and still, you know how plums are. They've got that skin that just is, it's kind of thick. So I just took some boiling water, boiled some water on the stove, threw the plums in for, it was really just a minute, and the skin started to break. And then it was easy. I let them cool and got the skin mostly. I just took a knife and just kind of scraped off the skin because it came in off in little pieces. And of course, you want to take them off the pit too. So I used peach and plum yesterday. You can make, you can just do a variety. You can do one flavor. You could use all of your old fruit at once and just do a mixed fruit leather. So you combine your fruit and sugar in a blender, add the lemon juice and puree until smooth. Transfer the pureed fruit to a saucepan and bring it to a simmer. Reduce the heat to medium-low and cook, stirring occasionally. And you want the mixture to be pretty thick, 35 to 45 minutes, and don't let the mixture splatter. It'll be really hot. So that's one way you can do it. Take your fruit and sugar, put it in the blender, add lemon juice, and then stick it on the heat and reduce. Another way that you can do it is you can take your fruit, you can put it in the saucepan, chopped up, add a little bit of water to it, and let that cook down a little bit. Once it's cooked down, then let it cool, and you can throw it in your blender then. Then put it back on the stove, add your sugar and your lemon juice. So either way, you got to cook it on the stove just a little bit. So this one calls for 1 1/4 pound of chopped fruit, 3/4 cup of sugar, throw that in the blender, add the lemon juice, transfer it to a saucepan, bring it to boil, reduce the heat, let it cook down a little while. Then you have your baking sheet with parchment. You could use a silt pat mat or something like that too. But what's nice about the parchment is once it's done, you just roll it up. There's no trying to move it around or anything. You pour your fruit puree onto the parchment and you spread it out. And you want it to be a nice thin layer, and you're going to bake it until it's barely tacky, about 3 hours, maybe 4. You just don't know. It's up to you know, it's up to your oven, really. I used the convection. I thought it would help circulate the heat a little bit more and move things around. I'm not sure what would happen if I didn't use the convection on that one. But, you know, just plan that it's going to take a few hours. And then what I did is I turned it off and then went to bed after I thought that it was done. I turned it off and I went to bed and I just left it in the oven. So this morning I got up and took it off the baking sheet, rolled it up nice and tight from one short end to the other, and then I just used some scissors and chopped it up into strips. And then I tasted it and it was delicious. Tart, yet a little bit of sweet, super intense. Like really, really intense flavor, like good fruit leather should have. So there you go. You know, if you're using plums, you're going to want 5 unpeeled chopped plums. Peaches and nectarines, same thing, 5 medium. If you're doing apple, you want 3 large Gala or Granny Smiths, 4 cups of strawberries, 5 raspberry. If you're doing grape, 3 1/2 cups of grape, preferably Concord. And, you know, actually, I think there were some black grapes at the grocery store up at Hammer and Weekon last week. If you're doing banana, 5 medium peeled bananas, a couple large mangoes will make this recipe. Anyway, I have a list of different fruit and what you need, but you just, like I said, just measure. You need a 1 1/4 pound. And you can mix, you can just, you know, make one flavor. So, delicious. I love that. Now I know I'm going to make fruit leather more often. It is expensive in the store, isn't it, for the good fruit leather? Also, another thing that you could do with leftover fruit is you could make some sorbet. And that's just as easy as the fruit leather, probably maybe even easier, but it's the same thing. It's sugar, water, and you need your fruit, some lemon juice. Here's a recipe for, I was thinking of strawberries because a lot of us, you know, it's strawberries will go bad or get overripe, and then we can't put them on that beautiful shortcake, or we can't use them to dip in chocolate or whatever. So this one is a strawberry black pepper sorbet, and I thought this was interesting. This is from myrecipes.com. You need a cup of sugar, a cup of water, a couple tablespoons of coarsely crushed black peppercorns, 6 cups of sliced strawberries, which is like 2 pounds, and 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice. Combine the sugar and water in a saucepan, bring it to boil, and make your simple syrup. Then, when the sugar dissolves, remove from heat, stir in the peppercorns, and let it sit for 20 minutes. Then, drain the syrup into through a fine sieve into a bowl because you want to get rid of the peppercorns. Place half the sugar syrup, half the sliced strawberries, and fresh lemon in a blender and process it. Pour the pureed mixture into a bowl and repeat with the remaining syrup and strawberries. Then you put that mixture into your freezer can of an ice cream freezer and freeze according to manufacturer's instructions. And then you spoon it into another container and cover it and freeze for 4 hours or until firm. If you don't have an ice cream freezer, you can do this in your freezer without one. Just put it in a bowl and bring it out and give it a stir here and there. And that's how easy it is to make sorbet. So all sorts of flavors. Peach sorbet would be really good. Another thing that you can make with leftover fruit that's sweet and summery would be... Oh, here's a good recipe, too. I found this one at afoodcentriclife.com. Honey nectarine sorbet. I love nectarines. And nectarine sorbet, oh my gosh. Honey nectarine sorbet... Just really quick, let me give you this one. 3 pounds of nectarines, 4 tablespoons of honey, 2/3 cup of water, optional, 1 tablespoon of Grand Marnier. Yum. 1 to 2 extra nectarines or fresh raspberries for garnish, which is optional. And you need an ice cream maker for this, or you can just do it the old-fashioned way and put it in the freezer and you just keep breaking it up and stirring. But, of course, peel the nectarines, cut the flesh off from the pit, chop the flesh, add it to the saucepan, add your honey and water, cook the nectarines over medium-low heat until they're soft, 10 minutes. Remove the nectarines from the heat, add the Grand Marnier, if you're using that, and then you're going to puree it in your blender. Pour it into a stainless steel or glass bowl. Chill it in an ice bath, and then put it in your refrigerator for about 1 hour until totally cold. That helps the sorbet churn faster. You might have a fancy ice cream maker that chills when you put it in there because of the air compressor. You might have that fancy thing. And if you do, great. If you don't, you do need to chill it. When chilled, pour the nectarine base into the ice cream maker and churn according to the directions. So there you go. Honey nectarine. Oh, that sounds so delicious. Okay, so besides making sorbet and roll-ups, you can also do popsicles. And you don't have to have a fancy popsicle holder to make popsicles. You could just use plastic cups or paper cups even, and a stick. Here's a recipe for strawberry and cream popsicles. I wanted to share it with you. Strawberry and cream, and actually what it is it's vanilla yogurt. So 2 cups of strawberries, hulled and sliced, 1/3 cup of sugar, 2 teaspoons of pure vanilla extract, and 1 cup of vanilla yogurt. Add the berries to a bowl and toss with the sugar and vanilla. Let sit out for a little bit until they get juicy. Then to a blender or food processor, add all that together along with yogurt and puree until smooth. So I just wanted to give you this recipe as an example that you could do this with peaches, you could do this with blueberries, you could do this with plums, you could do this with all sorts of different fruit and berries. And if you add that yogurt, it's going to give it that creaminess. You've been down to Mexico or anywhere where they make those wonderful popsicles. Love them. Love them. Love the ones made with coconut. So try not to throw that fruit away. Try to use it if you can. Just takes a little bit of your time. And especially those popsicles, if you have room in your freezer. And the kids are going to love them. And then you're not going to throw all of that expensive, precious fruit away. Coming up next on What's for Dinner, we have the drink of the week. coming up. Support for What's for Dinner comes from Keto's Cave and Liquor Store, on Singley Alley and open 7 days a week, with a large selection of beers, wines, brandies, and rums to cook with. Accompany any meal or potluck, or for mixing in a new favorite drink. Keto's Cave and Liquor Store. Welcome back to What's for Dinner. It's time for the drink of the week, and I received this notice from Wine Spectator, and that's a publication about wines. If you're someone who loves wines, which a lot of people here in Petersburg do, they've just released the winners of the 2015 Restaurant Awards, which honor outstanding eateries with extraordinary wine lists. And this year, the program recognized more than 3,600 restaurants that they feel serve good wines. And Alaska has been honored in Wine Spectator's 2015 Restaurant Awards. So I have a list of winners, of course, in our area, which is the state. So I'm going to read you some of those so that when you're up north and Anchorage, Fairbanks, were there any here in Juneau? Let me see. Well, we'll read down the list here. I read it once and I can't remember. But stop in if you're a wine lover. Here's the restaurants that are serving great wines, not only great wines, but what they're serving is the right type of wine to go with their menu. So these folks are taking the extra time to make sure the wine goes with what they're serving. So here's one, the App & Glow restaurant in Denali Lodge at Denali National Park. I've never been there. Dove Island Lodge in Sitka. So there's one not too far away, and many of you go to Sitka. So the Dove Island Lodge, although it might be just one of those places you have to stay at. The Homestead Restaurant in Homer. Lavelle's Bistro in Fairbanks. They serve continental cuisine. Mark's Brothers Cafe in Anchorage on 3rd Avenue. Many of you have been there. Resurrection Roadhouse in Seward. The Seward Winson Lodge. Saks Cafe and Restaurant in Anchorage. Seven Glaciers at Alyeska Resort. That's a good restaurant. Mm-hmm. So they... that is a good restaurant. They have great wines. Yes, they do. Southside Bistro at in Anchorage. And Sullivan Steakhouse in Anchorage. And those are on the list for Alaskan restaurants if you're getting up north or over to Sitka. And now for the drink of the week. The drink of the week is a frozen Moscow Mule, because I saw one on, I had a nice weekend. I spent a lot of time in the house. It was so nice. I turned on a couple cooking shows here and there as I was cleaning or folding laundry or cooking. Anyway, Moscow Mule, and this isn't the Moscow Mule recipe that I saw on Mind of a Chef. This is from the internet, and this is from DrinkWire. What you need is 1 cup of ginger beer sorbet, and we know how to make sorbet. You can just take the ginger beer, and put it in the freezer for just a little while. It keeps stirring it, so it's nice and slushy, and that's all you need to do. So think ahead of time if you want to make these. You also need 4 ounces of vodka, 1 lime juiced, and also lime zest of a half of a lime. When a recipe calls for this, don't juice the lime first and then try to zest it. Zest the lime and then cut it and then juice it. Also, a cup of ice, 2 mint sprigs, and that's pretty much it. You've got your vodka, your frozen ginger beer, lime juice, half of a lime zest, 1 cup of ice, and 2 mint sprigs for garnish. In a blender, you're going to add vodka, the ginger beer, the frozen ginger beer. Even if you're freezing ginger beer in a block, it's fine. Lime juice, and then on medium speed, blend it until all the ingredients are mixed. Divide the ice between serving glasses, and then add your blended mixture, garnish with lime zest and mint. And that makes 2. And that's a frozen Moscow Mule. Sounds delicious and refreshing for the summer, doesn't it? When the sun comes back, right? And that's it for What's for Dinner today. Thanks for joining me. Even if you don't have old fruit, you can still make all these great things that I talked about today, like fruit leathers. It tastes great with fruit that isn't overripe. Happy cooking and happy eating. We'll be back next week with What's for Dinner.